And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. Hello. I am here with Wayne Winston. I was gallivanting around trying to bring you into the studio, and I was strolling a little too slowly for Andrews. Hello, Wayne. Welcome. Hi.
Hello.
Wait, why don't I put your mic on? Good, good, good. Okay. Hi.
Okay. It's always easier with the mic on.
It is. It is. Hello. Is it raining out there or not really?
No, it's just a little gray. But that's about it.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Didn't you love that it was a rainy day yesterday?
I did.
I mean, it was like a rainy day. I haven't had a rainy day in ages.
I'm trying to tell you. And actually, you know, with the drought stuff going on, you know, man, we need it as much as we can get it. And so I was happy to have it. But it was good to see. You know, it was good to feel. So we'll have more of that soon enough.
Well, the truth is it's felt like it's almost going to rain almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it finally just rained already.
Yes,
so happy
did.
About that. All right. So listen, before we get to something I want to talk about, let's talk about what you wanted to talk about. You say that there's something going on Sunday. You want the people to know about some kind of a rally in Bridgeport. Talk to me. What's happening?
Yes, there's a Stop the Hate rally that is going to happen in Bridgeport on this Sunday. There's a gentleman, Brian Donahue, started this in another part of the state, and he invited me to come up to speak at one of the rallies, and I did the one in Waterbury.
Okay.
And it was a great turnout, and what it is that he's very concerned about what is going on and across our state and across our country, where there's so much hate and intolerance. Civility has just gone by the wayside. And then we have, you know, schools being attacked and children, you know, dealing with all types of racial nonsense. And he adopted a black child himself, at least one, him and his wife. And he just got tired of what he was dealing with. So
Brian Donahue, is that his name?
That's his name.
Doesn't Brian sound Donahue. Like a black guy. He's not a black guy,
He's
right?
not.
Okay.
He's yeah. not. And in fact, you'll probably call in shortly.
Oh, very nice.
Just to say and give his background.
Okay.
Now, you know, on the show, we always try to bridge the gaps that we're always more alike than different. And I was literally at an urgent care center today because I had a clogged ear.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so they went and sorted that out. And they're talking, and, you know, the nurse there is basically saying, you know, just so much tension in America right now.
You were talking with the nurse?
Yes.
How did the subject come
yes.
up?
When I'm there, we're just talking about life in general, how's things going.
Okay.
And, you know, I said, you had to be pretty busy, you know, monkeypox and all that.
Oh,
I
yeah.
kind of made that little joke.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, Wayne, it's not so much about the monkeypox. It's what's happened prior to this. It really is very, very difficult.
You mean because of COVID and the stresses of the healthcare system? Is that what she's
well,
referring to?
Well, she's talking to people, a lot of the people who come in.
Yeah.
And they are voicing crazy opinions,
oh,
you know, the type that
everything.
Are so contemptuous towards her and like the whole thing was.
I know what you're saying.
Was fake and it was made up. And
oh,
it's,
my goodness.
You know. People on the left and, you know, all this. And it's like.
And she's getting this as a nurse.
Yes.
She's getting this idea that the COVID thing was overblown or the vaccine thing was made up. Or she's getting this and she's telling you this.
Yes. So as we're talking, I tell her I'm an activist, so I get to deal with a lot of this and meet a lot of different people from different backgrounds. And I told her, look, you're not alone. You know, the majority of people in this country are on the right side. You know, they want to have equity, diversity, inclusion. They want to have their children accepted by all races, nationalities, and so on. You know, they want civility. And she says, but it sounds like they might be winning.
But how do you jump from, I just want to ask you to make the intellectual leap.
Sure.
How do you jump from a conversation about how a nurse is feeling put upon and stressed because people have lost trust in the healthcare system, to this conversation about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tell me about how your brain is making that jump.
Because part of the stress that is happening, schools are being attacked. In New Canaan, there's an article where they totally just took that whole initiative out. Equity, diversity, and inclusion. And what is crazy is we always had that. It was never a big political issue until a couple of years ago. It really got politicized. I mean, we were talking about the issues in the civil rights movement. We were talking about the challenges that happened with America and how it got
better. But what I'm asking you, Wayne, is a conversation about health care and the stresses about health care. There isn't an automatic leap to a conversation about diversity, equity, and inclusion unless you're making an assumption that it's the same people that have been stressing about vaccines and health care that are the same people that also don't want to have diversity, equity, and inclusion. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, let me be clear.
That's what I'm saying. Because that's an intellectual leap.
That's what it transitioned into. Because there's an umbrella that a lot of this tension is under. You know, and when you break it down to those things being all combined, you wind up having the places that these things are happening in. So it's happening in politics. It is happening in our school systems. There are teachers who are afraid to teach about these things. We have teachers who are fear talking about the issues like we just had with George Floyd, the same thing that basically got us started. They're worried about talking about that. Tulsa, Oklahoma, there are actively people trying to say, we can't talk about that. Groups and organizations that are coming to school board meetings saying that. And it's like, how do we make things better?
Well, you know, on the flip side of that, Wayne, there are parents who are organizing because they feel that they can't say what's on their mind with respect to teaching sex ed or teaching gender classifications in schools. And they feel also silenced.
Well, I think that that's a separate issue.
Okay.
Okay. Civil rights movement, racism, and the racial
history. You can see how it
gets
all mixed up, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, and some of it gets mixed up on purpose.
Okay.
Because you use that key to go through that door, and you affect the things after it. Literally, there is a discussion about, should we talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma? Tom Hanks has a video, and it's a video clip, and I'm sure I can get it for you, where he's basically offended that he didn't know anything about this in school, and he wanted to know why not.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear about it till a couple of years ago myself.
And that's because
I didn't know anything about the community in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was a black community that was raised by segregationist haters, and they burned down the community and kicked everybody out.
Absolutely.
And killed people.
And so in that same state of Tulsa, Oklahoma, there was legislation passed after the congressional hearings that said, oh, we can't talk about that anymore.
We can't talk about that.
We have to get that out of our schools. Now, you could say, well, they just didn't like the people. You know, you had survivors. You know, a woman who was literally alive.
Yeah, there was
families,
one woman, yeah.
Who literally lost their property in the towns. I mean, that's just a terrible, horrible thing. You know, America did that. You can't get better if we don't fix the things that are wrong, if we can't face them. That's a problem, and that's as someone holds up Martin Luther King as being, you know, he was very much an advocate towards peace and harmony. Well, how he got there, it was bloody. There were people that literally were killed just for saying that black people are equal to white people. The people in my community, in the black community, and even Latino community in particular, we're concerned about that because that concerns us. We can't wait until all the buildings are on fire and we see these white supremacists and these crazy organizations trying to take over capital. That's big to us because when you look in all of their backgrounds, they pretty much have on there that they want to separate this nation. And even separated from people like yourself and most of our listeners who want an inclusive nation. If we haven't accepted the different races in this country by now, that just doesn't make any sense. Other than this is just a group of people who are stoking a
you know,
fire.
Speaking of that, I wanted to give you some data here. Hold on. Let me find it. You know me with my data. Let me find this. I saw this today in my topics list. That okay. Hold on one second. There is a story today. Hold on. I'm going to find it. Top national news. Ah. Axios covering the rise of interracial marriage and its approval rating. Listen to this. In regular surveys of adults, one of the biggest statistical changes in American opinion is that approval of interracial marriage in the United States is at an all-time high of 94%, according to Gallup. Why does it matter? Because in 1958, when they first asked the question, only 4% of Americans approved of interracial couples. From 4 to 94, don't you think that's extraordinary? Don't you think we ought to at least say, wow, we're making some progress?
We should absolutely.
I mean, that's incredible.
That.
No matter how you look at it, they say it's sky high, no matter how you slice the data. Of the ages 18 to 29-year-olds, 98% approve. But even over 50, 91% approve. Non-white Americans, 96%. White Americans, 93%. I mean, no matter how you look at it.
Yes.
And every sector of the country, 94% in the East, 93% in the Midwest, 93% in the South, 97% in the West, as well as the prevalence of intermarriage, which has also increased. Back in 1967, just 3% of married couples were interracial. Now it's 20%. And what did I tell you? I've told you the largest growing demographic of children in America are interracial children, regardless of marriage, because many people are not getting married and they're having children. America is increasingly diverse. We're projected to have a majority, quote, minority population by 2045. Younger Americans are more educated than ever, and there is a higher rate of interracial marriage among those with more education. The bottom line is 55 years after Virginia v. Loving, right?
Mm-hmm.
The legalization of interracial marriage, Americans nearly unanimously approve of love across races. I just think that that's pretty amazing. I just think we should say that.
Oh, listen, again.
That's good news for America.
Listen, that is great news for America. So when we point out something we have to fix, it doesn't mean nothing else is working. It doesn't mean we're not making progress. I mean, because that absolutely is great news. Now, understand, there's a group of people that are against that. They are against interracial marriages.
Okay, there's a group of people against something all the time. But telling ourselves this actual data, I think should make us feel a little bit more optimistic. Because a lot of people are feeling very pessimistic about America. We are going to come right back. I think your friend Brian is on hold. Brian, stay there. We'll be right back with Wayne Winston when we return.
And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back to the show. Wayne Winston joins us on Wednesday for a different perspective. Wayne, you've got your friend Brian Donahue who called in. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Hi, Wayne. Hi, everybody. I appreciate the time to talk about End the Hate Across the State movement.
Yes, please tell us the details. We've had some callers who wanted those details again, please, Brian.
Sure. This Sunday, on 9/11, there will be a rally. We're doing rallies across the state. We've already done rallies in Hartford, Tolland, New London, New Haven. And this Sunday on the 11th, it will be at 1 o'clock on McLevy
Greens.
And so how this got started was that I live in Rocky Hill, and I've been looking for inclusion and equity. I have three kids. One of them is 16, one of them is 13, the other one is 12. And Rocky Hill is a very white community. And they had, I went to my daughter, 16, we went to an organization event. She came out and she was quiet. And I said, oh gosh, what did I do now? And she's white like me. And she said, Daddy, I've always had teachers who look like me. I've had characters in books who represent me. But my two sisters, who are adopted, and their biological sisters, they have same mother, same father. they were adopted, and they don't have, as my 16-year-old said, they don't have those opportunities to see black people in books. In movies, usually they're the villains, and they're not portrayed in very good light, when we know a lot of wonderful people, you know, and role models. But they don't get that in the school. So what we did was, I've been working on equity and inclusion in Rocky Hill for the last, probably since 2014, actually. Because when we adopted our children, there was a practice at one time in Connecticut that stated that if you adopt a child from the DCF, and I do not speak on behalf of DCF, I always want people to make clear that of that fact. It says that I gave birth to my two children, my 13 and the 12, when, I mean, they came at our home at 3 months and 16 months, but there would have been no way they would have lost out on so much of their original birth certificate, because it has my, I'm white, my wife is white, and what happens is that it cuts off my, thank God, my two children were black and brown, because of the fact that they know they are biracial, they have both cultures. In the past, they would just ignore, cut off the culture of the child. And the, my two children, remember, they're biracial. They could have ended up white. They would not have known that they were black. And, you know, one, the father was black, the mother was white. So that was erasing of their history. And so we went to the thing, and I've been working on issues of equity and quality and inclusion in my town and also statewide. I do this the most recent thing that precipitated the End Hate Across the State movement was that there were new, my child goes to a CREC school. And
a
not
what
that
school?
Particular school?
A what
a
school? CREC,
a Capital Region Educational Council, which is in Hartford. And there were nooses found in a nearby school that was a CREC school.
What does CREC stand for again?
Capital Region Educational Council in Hartford.
And what is that? What kind of a school is that?
That is a charter school.
And you chose to send your kids there versus a public school?
We did, because of the fact that my daughter, the 13-year-old, actually she was 12 at that point, and she's 13 now, said, "Dad, I want to have people who look like me. I want teachers who are African American or people of color. I want to read books and see that we're not being killed on page two, and the white person is the savior of everything." Because we do know that there is a lot of discrimination that goes on. I have faced it with my own children in the environments that they go in. Oftentimes, there are people be staring at us. But what happened was, last year I was invited. Somebody knew I was working in Rocky Hill area, and they invited me to a meeting. And what they wanted to do was, there was state representatives from both sides, and like the Senate and their House representatives from both sides, who wanted to incarcerate youth of color and of diversity, kept blaming the stealing of cars on the children of diversity. But there was no facts to actually back it up. They just kept saying that they wanted to do that. So they wanted to open up the correctional facility, lower their age of risk, take away their rights for involved in the juvenile justice system. And they did not want to provide resources up front. They wanted to provide resources on the back end. So I went to a couple meetings. I kept standing up and saying, "Wait a minute, what about my kid?" They thought I was white like them. And so they thought there would be no issues. You know what? You got to know who you're talking to. You got to know your audience. Because my children, the 16-year-old is my biological child who's white, but my two youngest ones, 12 and 13, they are going to be identified as black. Then we got more information about different hate crimes going around the state of Connecticut. There's also been an increase in the white supremacy groups. So I turned to a friend of mine who I've been working with in equity inclusion. Her name is Corinne Prescott from Power Up Connecticut. We both sat down at a table and we said, "We got to do something about this. We can't just let the legislators just walk and take our children's rights away and hurt our families." So we started the rallies. We started up a capital in Hartford on the no state house green. Then we went to New London. We have gone to New London, Talland, New Haven. Now we're doing New Haven, and then we're doing this Sunday in Bridgeport, the Fairfield County.
And who's going to be at the one in Bridgeport, Brian? Do you know anybody?
I've invited several different organizations, civil rights organizations, faith organizations, organizations dealing with schools, and senators, you know, some of the legislators, some lawmakers. You know, there are a lot of organizations that have come forward and have helped out in Waterbury, helped out in Talland, helped out in Hartford. I also do this with the blessing of my church, which is the United Church of Christ. There's an individual there by the name of James. He is the minister of racial equality, and his name is James Ross. And James Ross has spoken at these rallies. And he's a black man, and he has said to me, Brian, we support you, and we need to do this. Even though the first one in Hartford was a little bit tense, we were some threats against me and Corinne because of the fact that we were stirring up a hornet's nest. But we're not trying to stir up a hornet's nest. What we're trying to do is have people be able to come and identify the issues through their experience, their jobs. Then we would follow up with smaller community conversations, and we will have already identified the what the issues are. Then we come up with the resolutions to these issues. Each county is different. So then at that point, we would be looking for legislative champions, you know, people that would work with us to make sure these resolutions turns into bills.
Thank you, Brian. I get it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, that was a lot.
Well, Brian, I think the critical one is you have to tell what happened to, I believe, your daughter at summer camp, was it?
Or the summer camp. I mean, my children have been called, my two youngest children have been called names of the N-word. They have been made to feel very discriminated against. And when we brought it, there was also one child who mentioned that they were going to kill my kid. And the school never, this is not correct. This is a summer camp over the summer. They never called us and informed us of what was going on. Our children at lunch, at dinner time, told us, hey, Dad, you know what happened today? I was so upset because of the fact that no child, but they were targeting her, you know, their physical characteristics and stuff like that.
It's a really painful thing. It's very painful for a parent. Very, very painful when that happens. It happens to parents of all kind of kids. It can happen to parents of kids with disabilities.
That's the other thing I would say to you. This is not just about race. Let me tell you, I am a social worker. I've been a social worker for 30 years. Mm. As I said, I do not speak on behalf of my employer.
Okay.
But this rally is not just for children of color. It's children of color, a diverse faith, LGBTQ+.
Mm-hmm. I hear
you. This is for foster youth.
Yeah, so, whatever makes you different, whatever it is in your group.
That's what this is all about.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, that's a really rough thing for a parent.
Organizations that have those, that help each of those groups.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep thinking about my own parents because my parents, my dad is a first-generation immigrant. My mother isn't that far behind. But they were very sensitive when they were growing up to being Jewish in a larger world. And they chose to raise Jill and me in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood because they knew that we would have some exposure to discrimination as adults, but they did not want us to have a lot of it as kids. And they felt that if we were immersed in a Jewish community, we would be made fun of for the reason kids are always made fun of. You're too fat, you're too thin, you're too short, you're too tall, you're too stupid, you're too smart. And we certainly had our share of bullying anyway, because I almost think it's a rite of passage for kids somehow. Not necessarily a good one, but it seems to be real and universal that most kids can remember being made fun of for something or other when they were kids themselves. And so I don't think we're ever going
to
really change human nature.
I reached out to the Jewish community. I reached out to the Jewish community in Fairfield County. I'm hoping that we will have Jewish members, you know, attendees. Because it is on a Sunday. When we did it in Holland, I asked the Jewish Federation to be a participant in it. And they we had moved it from a Saturday to a Sunday so that the Jewish people could honor their Sabbath.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Jewish population did not show up for the Sunday rally, even though we moved that for them because I wanted them to feel included. And
yeah,
this is another opportunity.
But what I'm trying to say is, and this is a larger conversation, we're coming to the end of our time. You know, parents have to think about their choices when they are worried about discrimination, and it's a real choice about whether or not it's better to raise kids in the society that they're going to face when they're adults, or it's better to raise them in a society of people that look like them because they'll have that comfort level and gain that confidence growing up. I don't think there's an easy answer. There's pros and cons for each approach. But, you know, every group that's faced discrimination has to think about that.
Absolutely.
And they'll have a choice.
Like a lot of that's why I reached out also into the foster, because the foster children tend to also be overrepresented by being Black or Latino.
Interesting.
And the foster parents often are not Black or Latino.
Well, they try and get them, you know. They try and seek them
out.
They do.
They sure do.
Brian, we're wrapping it up. Wayne Winston, thank you very much. So once again, Wayne, the details on Sunday that we've been talking about.
So you can see there'll be a lot of different voices there.
But it's at
McLevy Green.
McLevy Green.
Downtown, it's right across from the Comedy Shop and near the mayor's office in Bridgeport, Broad Street.
At 1 p.m. on Sunday.
1 p.m. and yes, Congressman Hines will be joining us and quite a few other speakers.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you so much.
Thank
you, Brian, for calling in.
And I hope you guys come out.
We'll be back tomorrow with more of the Lisa Wexler Show, Norm Pattison Studio. He's going to rev you up. Coming right up on WICC.